teaching controversial issues. And you'll excuse me, my throat is very dry, and sometimes my voice kind of fades in and out when I get in these situations, but we'll make the best of it. About a year ago, I taught an earth science class, and I structured it around inquiry-based learning. And what that means is basically you ask guiding questions, and you have the students learn enough to try to answer these questions. So the two questions that I used were these. Why do scientists think that the Earth is 4.6 billion years old? Why do scientists say that global climate change is real? And what is our role in this change? Now, it might help you to understand that those are controversial questions in my setting because I teach at a university where the students are very conservative in their background. Now, I thought I had done a fabulous job with this class. I was very excited. I was structuring it around inquiry-based education. I'm a science educator by background. My PhD is in science education. I included all the latest bells and whistles in this class. And I thought for sure this class was going to bring about concept change, which is the goal. I want students to think about some of these controversial issues differently. Well, I'd like to show you one course evaluation. Now, I know you can't really read that, but I'll give you a minute to absorb what you're seeing here on the screen. We obviously still use paper evaluations. Now, this student, and I do happen to know who this student is. In fact, she is one of my advisees, marked all strongly disagree. Now, it didn't matter that whatever the line said, you know, grading of my work seemed fair and appropriate. It didn't matter what that said. What she was trying to do was make a point. And her point was, read my evaluation because I have something to say to you about this class. Now, I know you can't read her comment, but I know you probably want to know what it said. So let me read it to you. I kind of get a kick out of this, right? Number six, she forgot herself. She forgot she was making a political statement and actually tried to say something fairly flattering about me. Here's what she says. I am concerned that this class is taught in the early stages, age of the Earth in particular, in a manner which undermines a young Earth view. I think that is bad theology. This class successfully teaches students the old Earth is valid, young Earth is invalid, which I find to be incorrect. PBU, that's the old university name, has made the decision to turn from biblical concepts, which is unfortunately very sad. It is quite evident in this course. Now, for this young lady, this was a controversial issue, and I would just make this problem even more real for you by saying that this student is an education major who is planning on teaching middle school science. And for her, the science of an old Earth, in fact, was in some way taking us away from adherence to the Bible. So here, I think, is the question that I would really like us to focus on, and hopefully the lesson plan will illustrate in some ways how I think we can do this. How do we help Christian students become scientifically literate and articulate with respect to controversial issues? It doesn't mean I'm trying to turn every Christian student into an old earther, but it does mean, do they understand the science and can they speak about it knowledgeably and without angst, for lack of a better word? Now, let's think about how people learn. I don't know how you think people learn. I know how I'm pretty sure people don't learn, and that is information absorption. I talk, you take it in, and that's all there is to it. I subscribe to a constructivist theory of education, which means that I think I do have a role in transmitting information to you, but what you do with it then is you look at your prior knowledge, not explicitly, but you take what I've said and you filter it through what you already know. And in that process, you make linkages and you make connections and you form new knowledge. Now, when we talk about the role of prior knowledge in education, particularly from a constructivist point of view, We talk about three main areas. We usually talk about facts. What content do the students already know? We talk about concepts. What conceptual framework does the student already hold? And we talk about skills, procedural skills. What can they do? But I think when we are teaching for concept change, and particularly when we're teaching students who find our topics to be controversial, we're doing a disservice if these are the only three types of prior knowledge we think about. Because, as you all probably are well aware, your worldview, the presuppositions with which you filter all information, are actually the most fundamental source of all prior knowledge. What I feel like we do sometimes as educators when we teach some of these topics is we unpack the top kind of prior knowledge, but we forget that it is fundamentally based on worldview presuppositions. So what I would like to say is this. This is sort of the point today, and hopefully then I'll have some time to illustrate this point. I think that the teaching of a controversial issue in science, and you could pick any one you want, we could just yell them out, is not so much a teaching of the content of the issue itself as it is the ability to discern and unravel the worldview presuppositions that underlie the positions on the issue. How many educators do we have here in the room? How many of you are teachers or teachers in waiting, as we like to call them? All right. How many of you are science teachers? All right. How many of you have ever either taught or learned about a controversial issue? What research shows us is that when we teach controversial issues, content does not bring about concept change. You can talk to a conservative Christian student about the evidences for an old earth until you're purple, and they will not incorporate any of that content into their understanding as long as it is still in conflict with their worldview. So if we're teaching for concept change, and by that I mean teaching because we believe what we're teaching is true about the world, we have to consider worldview. Researchers in the United Kingdom have worked on this a lot, because in the United Kingdom, it is law that you teach all sides of controversial issues and that you teach students how to deal with the controversies. I've put some sources on the handout for you, so I would highly recommend that if you're interested in the topic, that you look at these sources. But science education, according to many of these British researchers, should explicitly encourage students to do these four things. Now, I think you'll be a little interested to read these. Number one, accept received views less automatically. Let's go back to my audience, a very conservative, many of them are fundamentalist Christian students. They come to me generally in their sophomore year, and I try to help them understand various things about how science works. They come to me already believing that science and their faith are enemies, not because they've investigated that for themselves, but because that's the home that they've been raised in. So I heartily endorse that science education should help us encourage students to take the views that they have learned at home and to examine them. We should help them acknowledge the importance of reflecting critically on their own stances. Why do they believe what they believe? Recognize the need to avoid prejudice that comes from a lack of critical reflection. We all know about the warfare language that goes on when we talk about science and faith issues. Science education should help us diffuse the warfare. This is not just a church issue and not just a faith issue. We can be doing this in science classrooms. Hopefully, I'll show you how. And we also would like to help students recognize that a person's stance on an issue will be affected by their worldview. This is in the science education research literature. discussions of the role of worldview when it comes to learning science. So, let's get on to what was advertised that we would talk about, which is these films. The title of the lesson, and I made handouts of the lesson, there were 15. If you'd like it in digital form because you'd like to either use it or tweak it, email me and I would be happy to send it to you. If they do it, it's propaganda. If we do it, it's education. Now that's a pretty, it might be a rather opaque title. My dad read that title and he said, what on earth does that mean? Okay. Hopefully it will become clearer as we go along here. Now, how many of you are familiar with the film Expelled? You've seen it, you know what it's about. Am I going to have to, I should recap a little bit. Okay. This is a documentary, a docudrama is how it's cast on the DVD, actually. Ben Stein hosts it, and he is basically talking about the ramifications to educators, to scientists in academia, for acknowledging, for holding an intelligent design perspective, for even mentioning that phrase oftentimes in class. And so he talks about what happens in it. And in fact, Caroline, who I just met, is in the film. She is one of the scientists who was expelled. There you go. Okay? So that's great. We have firsthand insight here. Inherit the Wind, 1960. It earned many nominations for awards. It is a remake of a play that talked about the Scopes monkey trial, if you're familiar with that, the trial from 1925 where a teacher was put on trial for teaching evolution. Now, let me just talk for a second about why I chose these two films. I want you to think about my audience again. My audience is conservative Christian students who have not thought a lot about why they hold the beliefs that they hold. Before they come to class, they watch both these films. Now, I taught this particular lesson in a film and culture class, not in a science class. So we do a lot of interdisciplinary teaching on my campus. Now, it won't take you long maybe to think about what their perspective might be. Do you think they liked Expelled? No? Loved it. They felt vindicated. They felt like, yes, science is out to get Christians and this proves it. Okay? This gives us the evidence. Love the film. Inherit the Wind? Hated it. They thought it made Christians look stupid and foolish and like all we do is sort of in lockstep, don't even look up, we just follow the leader. So that's why I picked those two, because I wanted the students to experience sort of this reflexive reaction. Now what I'd like to do is just very quickly take you through the lesson. No teacher worth their salt plans a lesson without first planning instructional objectives. I won't take the time to read these to you. Start in the center. The students will be able to. And start at the top. The objectives basically start very concretely and become more abstract and require higher levels of thinking as you go clockwise around this diagram. These are all written in the handout for you. But what I'd like you to notice is where I would like students to end up, which is this circle over here. I want students to be able to discuss the influence of worldviews on conclusions and conversations about controversial topics. So I have big goals for this lesson. This lesson, I am hoping, will get students interacting with these topics in a different way and, in fact, become apologetically more adept at dealing with the world. So, the hook. The hook. What do I do when they come in? They've watched the films for homework. They come into class. I say, would you take out a sheet of paper and I'd like you to fill in these blanks. Watching Inherit the Wind made me feel blank because blank. Right? Remember Mad Libs? You played it in the car as a kid, you know, fill in the blanks with words. Watching Expelled made me feel... Now, I'm really going after affective emotional responses. I want your gut. How'd you feel? Then we come back and I say, fill in this blank. I would characterize Inherit the Wind as being anti-blank. And likewise with Expelled. Because I'm trying to get their minds thinking toward the word propaganda. Okay? Now, I like both films, by the way, okay? And propaganda always has a negative cast, okay? And I understand that. But what I'm trying to get these students to do is to think about propaganda in general, okay? So what we do next, I ask the students what is propaganda and ask them to write a definition, which we then talk about their definitions. Most of the time, they don't know what it is. They know it's bad, they know they shouldn't like it, but they don't know what it is. I give them a couple of definitions. We discuss those. These are all in the handout. But what I think is the most important part here is that then we discuss this whole idea of propaganda. And I use these questions, and I just want to show you a few. Again, start concretely, move to abstract. That's how people generally better understand information. So we ask for examples. What organizations or people might use propaganda? It's perfect during political season to do this. What distinguishes propaganda from persuasive speech? Am I propagandizing right now? I'm trying to persuade you of a point. Am I using propaganda? It's an interesting question and one that we talk about. Can propaganda be unintentional? Can it be appropriate? And then finally we get to this question. To what extent are these films propagandist in nature? Now, we talk a lot about that, but most of the time they get stuck right here because they have no idea what I'm talking about. What do you mean? How am I supposed to know? So the second part of the lesson, and this is still input, meaning I'm trying to teach them something, we describe specific techniques. Okay, this is PowerPoint slides. So I use slides and show them descriptions and examples of specific techniques that are considered propaganda techniques. Okay, stereotyping, transfer, you can read them. Then we sort of practice. Can you identify these? Okay. So let me give you an example. So for example, here is transfer. Transfer is a propaganda device which links the authority or the prestige of something well-respected and revered, in this case, patriotism, the nation, to something we should do or accept. And you're all familiar, right, with the recruiting poster. Uncle Sam wants you. If you are patriotic, you will join the army. Okay? That's a propaganda technique. Now, in a constructivist theory of learning, simply telling people something is not teaching them. They have not learned it if they haven't used it and applied it and connected it with their own prior understandings. So that's what processing is. So I use three processing activities. The first of these is, and they love this, I put them into small groups. I give each group a propaganda technique, and I say, find a film clip from each movie that illustrates the technique you were given. So they do. And I'm afraid I'm not going to have time. I had two clips I was going to show you, and I think I'm just going to have to apologize and say we're just not going to have time to do that probably. Then they show their clips to the class. The whole point here is there is propaganda in both these films. The same techniques are used in both of these films. So then we move to the next question. I ask them to revisit their initial reaction. Remember the hook? How did you feel when? I say, go back to that. Think about how you felt. And now, and this is a silent written reflection, why did you feel differently about the two films? Why did you really like one and really dislike the other? Sometimes what happens is they actually dislike the film that seems to take their side of the issue because of how it was framed. So sometimes they don't like expelled the presentation, but they love the information. So then the third thing we do is we come to this quote, which is from Wikipedia. It's where I got it. Sorry, I know Wikipedia. It probably shouldn't be allowed on campus. If they do it, then that's propaganda. While if we do it, then that's information and education. Now, the first question I ask them is, who are the they and who are the we? Because it becomes immediately clear that you could apply this to any set of issues. The we is the people who agree with me, and the they is the people with the opposing worldview, with the opposing basic framework for looking at life. And we go on to talk about what do they think was the purpose or the intent Was it successful? Then we start talking about worldviews. And what are worldviews and what are worldview presuppositions? And by the way, I'm using those words as though, you know, it's a common language and it may not be. Your worldview is the filter through which you interpret all information that comes into your sphere. And worldview presuppositions are those very fundamental pillars that support your worldview that generally are unexamined and usually unprovable. For example, a worldview presupposition I hold is that there is a God. That's a worldview presupposition. We all have them. We rarely talk about them. And then we get to this. And notice, again, we're going concrete to abstract. How would you describe the relationship between a person's response to controversial issues and his or her worldview? Now, you can see, I'm a big believer in the power of discussion. I'm a big believer in students constructing their own understandings, because every time I've taught this, answers are different, discussion is different. This, to me, is the vital question. As Christians, what are the implications and responsibilities of having a biblical worldview when it comes to interacting with others about controversial issues? Age of the earth for some, the theory of evolution for some, or even, is there a biological basis to homosexuality, which, by the way, is my students' number one question this year on campus. It's what they are most interested in. This is that apologetic piece I'm trying to get them to come to. You are a Christian. How do you represent Christ in the world when it comes to your conversations about controversial issues? And do you understand that it really all has to do with the most basic presuppositional beliefs that you hold? Finally, and I'll show you one more slide, I asked them to come to two seemingly opposite ends of the spectrum. I asked students to read Francisco Ayala, who is he's a Catholic. He is an evolutionary creationist. The Christian Man's Evolution, How Darwinism and Faith Can Coexist. I also asked them to read Todd Wood. Todd Wood is a young earth creationist who works at Bryan College, interestingly enough, named for William Jennings Bryan from Inherit the court case. And Todd Wood says this: stop bashing the theory of evolution. If you are a Christian and you are a conservative Christian, stop bashing the theory of evolution, because there's nothing wrong with it. This is a worldview issue, and you need to look at it as a worldview issue. So I have them read these. Then, for the assessment, and I know I'm just about out of time, I ask students to respond in writing, and they bring this to the next class, which is usually a week later. Based on what you've learned, describe how a person's worldview presuppositions influence their perception of controversial issues, and give suggestions for having civil and meaningful conversations with other people with whom you disagree about a particular controversial issue. That's a lot. That's one lesson. That's a 3-hour lesson. Okay, so we have a 3-hour class meeting for this course. The takeaway, the one thing I hope that you will walk away from this lesson with is this: that worldview presuppositions are the most fundamental type of prior knowledge we have. It's how we think about everything that we think about. And so when we're trying to talk to students or colleagues or people in Sunday school about controversial issues, our discussion often takes place at a level up here where we're debating this fact, my fact versus your fact. And really what we're not understanding is that our disagreement is at a much more foundational level, where I think conversation would be much more productive and perhaps less volatile. I'm out of time because the moderator stood up. Do I have time for a question?
Time for maybe two questions if they're very brief.